This is F1 Debrief. It's like International Rescue, except there's more drinking. Coming up this week, we talk race one in Melbourne, the vast scale of rookie drivers, and five-a-side football. We made it.
We survived.
It's unbelievable.
One down, 18 left to go.
Not that you're counting.
Not that I know. As if I would do such a thing.
It was quite hard work, wasn't it?
It was incredibly hard work. You know what people never tell you about following F1 in the early hours of the morning? It's how fat it makes you. All I've done for this weekend is consume sugar.
Yeah.
Lots and lots and lots of sugary things.
To try and keep you awake.
Just anything to give me enough energy not to pass out in front of the screen.
I did bake some brownies and I think they probably got us through the weekend.
Yes, I love your brownies. Good week,
bad week. It's been a good week for Karen Chandhok, who was confirmed as the latest reserve driver for Team Lotus. There must be something about having Lotus in the name that makes teams want a gazillion test drivers. Team Lotus now have Luiz Razia, David, Valsecchi, Ricardo Teixeira, and now Chandhok as well. That's quite a lot. There aren't that many practice sessions, especially when you throw it off the road at the first corner.
Only you could find the positives in Chandhok's week and call this a good week. He threw it off after, what, one corner?
It was quite embarrassing.
That was a terrible week. However, I do think now that I can see what Lotus are doing. I know, I've discovered their plan. None of this court business and fighting it out and legal means and all that kind of stuff. Basically, they've got a five-a-side football team each.
Yeah.
And they're just going to play for the name, for the rights to the name Lotus. That's what it is.
I think I'd pay to see that. It's been a bad week for environmentalists because Bernie Ecclestone has spoken out against the idea of small turbo engines, which have been proposed for 2013 and onwards. He said that audiences will switch off and the promoters will start losing money. I was pretty sure that they were already.
It's news to me that promoters make any money.
Yeah.
That comes as a massive surprise to me. I don't know what difference the size of a Formula One engine makes to a promoter's profit, but if Bernie thinks it does, I guess, who are we to argue?
It's been a good week for Jenson Button as he became the first person to drive an F1 car around Mount Panorama. He took the MP423 round the circuit for 5 laps before swapping cars with Bathurst champ Craig Lowndes. Both were pretty blown away by their experiences, and Button said of Mount Panorama, "Television just doesn't do it justice."
I'm disappointed. Button did manage to break the lap record, but he didn't manage to smash it. I think he was just blown away by the scenery and the loveliness.
He wasn't fast enough for you.
I thought he could have gone quicker, but maybe not. I don't know. I just expected more performance from that run, especially 5 laps. Surely he must have figured it out by the 5th lap. No? Was it that long and that confusing?
I think you expect too much. It's been a bad week for Ron Dennis. Actually, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, but he got himself a 6-month driving ban after racking up 12 points or more on his licence. His latest offence was running through a red light, which is a bit naughty. I'm curious what all his other offences were, though. He doesn't seem the type to go speeding.
Well, this sounds like a Ron Dennis kind of fine, doesn't it? He's not done for going 200 miles an hour over the speed limit, loses his license. Not a Formula One.
It's not flashy.
I jumped a red light,
yeah.
and then I lost my license. I guess that his previous offences and fines were something that Fernando Alonso did wrong and then Ron offered to take the blame and the penalty and the fine. Isn't that how it works?
So there hasn't been too much news and views over the last couple of weeks because everything has been building towards this first race of the year, and it was quite a weekend, lots and lots of things happening. Where shall we begin?
Let's start at the back.
At the very bottom of the pile.
Absolutely, worst of the worst, but hopeless of the most hopeless. HRT turned up with that actual livery and planned to race it.
That's your problem with HRT?
I'm not.
Not the fact they were a big ball of fail.
Well, yes, that doesn't help. I'm just grateful that they did not manage to get any television exposure for a livery that says, your name here, and isn't this a cool spot?
So you're happy that they only managed one installation lap in all of Friday?
That's
because you didn't have to look at the car.
It is a disaster. And at some point, Bernie Ecclestone is going to lock them out of the paddock, and that will be the end.
Well, that pretty much happened this weekend.
Thank goodness for the 107% rule. There were debates last year as to whether or not it was necessary. I think this weekend proved it was absolutely necessary.
Well, there was also talk, I think Ted Kravitz might have said that the teams could club together and say, no, it's all right, we'll let them race. But that didn't happen.
I think HRT would have been a danger to everybody today. Bless the drivers for trying. Narain didn't get out till Saturday. Did he do any running at all on Friday?
No.
So he barely managed an entire lap all weekend. So that's unfortunate. Liuzzi managed that he didn't do too badly. He got close to the Virgins, who weren't stellar.
But they were only just inside the time.
They were in danger of falling out of the 107% rule, which is quite shocking, really. But yeah, that's the reason the rule exists, and I don't see them lasting this season. Mind you, I didn't think they'd last season, so what do I know?
No. I did find it quite weird because, like, the BBC, when they showed the qualifying order, and at the back you got the two HRTs and they put massive crosses through them, like, you don't exist here, which I thought was quite harsh. And all over the place, like, in the race results and all over the championship standings and everything, they just don't exist. And it's just weird to me because I've never seen that before. If a team turns up, they're there somewhere, even if they're on zero.
You missed Tom Walkinshaw's orange arrows. I think the same thing happened to them. Just go away. You don't belong here. You don't have the money to play. Go play in some other championship.
Martin Brundle was a bit flabbergasted at the whole thing as well. He couldn't understand why Liuzzi would take such a job.
It was the only seat going, and his team screwed him out of a contract.
Yeah, but Brundle was like, well, yeah, but he's had his chances, and this is just embarrassing.
Yes.
Which is true. But it can't be that embarrassing because team principal Colin Colless, he said it was a miracle.
That was a miracle.
Yep.
Talk about a glass half full kind of guy.
He said...
How do you see that as a miracle?
He said, we created a miracle again, but it wasn't enough. We'll be back stronger than ever in Malaysia. There, we will have more time to test the car and show where the F111 really belongs. We created a miracle and it wasn't enough. When a miracle's not enough, I thought the whole point was, I need a miracle, the miracle comes and it satisfies what you need.
Right, yes. I mean, it is Colin Collins' team now, isn't it? I mean, I know he doesn't own the name or the entry, but I mean, he's doing all of the work right there. So maybe he feels like he's done enough and he did as much as he could, or more than he could.
What's also worrying is Liuzzi, he said, I think because they were all trying to be positive, so Liuzzi, he said, well, it's great. I mean, we weren't as slow as we thought we were going to be. How slow did they think they were going to be?
207%.
Watching the sessions this weekend has been a bit different for us because we have a TV.
HD TV, but we'll get to HD in a minute. The first thing I have to mention is that I feel rather smug that I admitted that I was wrong and we went out and got a TV. So I'm smug that I got it wrong.
I'm still not admitting that I was wrong.
Well, here's the thing. During free practice, the BBC live stream was a disaster. Twitter and the Sci Podcast comments were full of people complaining that the stream was unwatchable, it was slow, it was unresponsive.
Yeah.
And I felt kind of smug as I sat with our new television saying, yeah, down with the internet, how useless. I mean, live streaming doesn't work, and et cetera, et cetera. So we were wrong last year to try and watch F1 solely online.
To rely on the internet.
Yes. And this year it's much better because we have a television.
So we have a more reliable stream, which is good. And also, like you said, it's in HD, qualifying in HD.
Stunning.
Free practice is not in HD because it's on the red button or whatever.
Yes, which is a shame because the sessions are filmed in HD. It's just the BBC don't have the capacity to show every session. I guess they don't have the bandwidth or the channel space to do that. So yeah. It's not...
Well, same as the forum after the race. We watched the race all in HD. It was lovely. Then you go over to the red button forum thing and it's like, what is this?
That's a significant drop in quality. I loved the BBC's graphics. I loved the HD quality. It's far too late. We shouldn't be congratulating Formula One for providing us HD footage. It's far, far, far too late to give anybody any credit for it. However, now that we've got it, I am chuffed a bit.
It's too late to credit them with HD, and it's far too late to credit us with getting a TV. When we first said in the comments we'd bought a new TV, we'd bought a TV, our only one, someone said, welcome to 1970. Thanks for that.
It's in colour and everything.
Qualifying was a bit mixed up, but I didn't think it was actually that exciting compared to last year when qualifying was the main event of the whole weekend.
Oh, I don't know. I think, in 2009, qualifying was the main event. Last year, I think it took a dip, and this year, I feel it's sort of on an upswing.
It's on the way back up again.
I enjoyed qualifying. It was a surprise that Nick Heidfeld didn't make it through. That was unexpected. Mm. There were a few other surprises throughout the hour. I think...
Barrichello had a bit of a fail.
Barrichello, yes. That was unfortunate for Barrichello. That was
one of many fails.
We'll talk about that in a bit. To me, yeah, I think it was... I don't know really what the difference was. I think the DRS, the drag reduction system, the wing, made more of a difference in qualifying than it did in the race, actually. Because the race is limited to... The restrictions in the race is what... It doesn't work at the first... two or three laps, and it doesn't seem to work in the rain, and there's all sorts of limitations on it in the race. It only works along the start-finish straight, and it doesn't get much use in the race, and it didn't seem to be very effective. But in qualifying, it had more of an effect, as we saw when Adrian Sutil booted it with the wing open and did a 360 down the main straight in a cloud of smoke.
Yeah, I didn't see that because it was just smoke.
It was just tyre smoke. Mm. Nothing, you couldn't pick a car out of that. So I would say that qualifying with a DRS is good. Qualifying with KERS is good. It's there's a lot going on.
It's a bit more of a free-for-all than in the race as well.
There's more chances drivers will make mistakes because there's more pressure. And also, I think because we've got a bigger speed difference between, we've got a bigger field spread between the front cars and the back cars, there were traffic problems. It was almost like Monaco in terms of traffic problems, and that's what caught Nick Heidfeld out. There were so many slow cars traveling around. One of them, or two of them, were obviously the HRTs, who were well off the pace and smack in the middle
of the
race.
Let's not talk about them again.
We've done that already. So yeah, it's to me, qualifying, actually, it's more interesting in 2011.
But the main story of qualifying was, of course, that Vettel was supremely fast, as per usual, carries on where he left off. And afterwards, he said that he hadn't used KERS in the lap, which was weird. We thought, well, that is strange. He said he couldn't find the button. Ha, ha, ha. And then in the race, it was the same story. Vettel led from the start, got all the way through without any major hiccups. And afterwards, Christian Horner said they hadn't run KERS at all Saturday or Sunday. They tried it on the car, didn't like it, took it off, and they were still super fast.
Newey says no, yeah. I think was the headline.
I did love that bit. He was like, Adrian Newey won't compromise, so we can't fit it in.
Yes. He doesn't like the batteries. The thing is, I mean, you had 2 years ago, Williams were trying to get a flywheel system to work in their car, and that caused all sorts of aero compromises, but they were determined to plug on with it, and it didn't happen. Newey, he's not even happy with the battery, which is like tiny and light and stuff. There was a rumour that Red Bull could have been using a mini KERS system, which is a system that doesn't recover any energy from the brakes, so therefore it's fed into the car before the race from the pit lane, and therefore it can only be used on off the start. So they get a KERS advantage from the start, but they don't get the problem with the brake balance being affected by KERS recovery and things, which is causing we saw that happen.
One-off KERS kind of thing.
It's a one-off KERS, but it doesn't recover. So I think we established in the comments it's just called ES. It's just an energy system. And I don't know whether or not that Red Bull are actually using it or whether they're planning to use it. It sounds like an interesting idea, even though it's completely against the spirit of all regulations to do with KERS. It may be technically possible, but what we did see was drivers, because you have to really floor, you just have to put your foot right on hard on the brakes to get the energy recovery system working at its maximum. You were seeing a lot of lockups and people struggling with the tyres. So the Red Bull drivers didn't have that problem. They could just focus on maximising the tyre potential and not worrying about KERS. And it seems to have worked for them because obviously Vettel did the business. He got to the end. He won the race.
Both drivers had an amazing start. So if they're not using this ES system, as we've called it.
Yes.
They're just supreme off the
line. I don't understand how they got such a good start either. All of the other cars with KERS haven't optimised it enough, and Red Bull gambled that would be the case, and they were lucky, or they've got some form of non-recovery KERS system, which they may have called it something else, or I don't know. I mean, Christian Horner definitely said, we did not have KERS on the car at the weekend. We tried it on Friday. It was too unreliable, and so we didn't run it on Saturday and Sunday.
Vettel did have an impressive start, and Webber also got off the line well, but he didn't really go much further than that.
Bad day for Webber.
He always has a bad day at his home race. What is that about?
I don't know what it is. I don't know why one... I mean, we saw the same with Alonso and Massa, but I would imagine that Webber is a better driver than Massa. To me, you know, Webber has more talent than Massa. You expect on a car with difficult tyres, Massa to struggle. He struggled last year. Not a huge surprise to see him spinning in qualifying. When he's out on cold tyres, he couldn't get the temperature into the tyres. He had issues all weekend.
Yeah, but Webber is clearly in the best car on the day.
Absolutely. And he was fine in qualifying, actually. I mean, he didn't quite manage to match Seb, but he was, you know, he was okay. He didn't look out of control.
Really disappointed after both sessions, actually, qualifying and the race. He just looked really down. I don't understand it. We've got to look into it. Can't figure out where this difference is coming from.
Interesting.
You mentioned Ferrari there. They got it all wrong in terms of tyres. Massa couldn't control his car at all.
So good in testing.
Yeah.
Second best team in testing. Did they learn nothing? Did they forget everything they've learned in winter? Over winter. I don't understand. And Alonso, it looks... During practice that Alonso knew what he was doing. He looked in control. He was happy to put the car where he wanted to put it. I had high hopes for a good showing for Ferrari, and then come the race, fell to pieces.
Well, Massa did suffer from having to battle with Button that whole time. I mean, that put the pair of them out of the battle for the front, really.
It was a bad start for Alonso too. Both cars had a bad start, presumably because of Col Thys, and they couldn't, you know, they got squeezed out of the first corner.
I like it when Alonso got stuck behind Petrov, and I like that they're becoming like nemesis.
Yes. Yes.
Enemies.
I mean, this race started. I mean, we've carried on as if the whole of the winter didn't happen. You've got Vettel up front, and you've got Alonso chasing down Petrov.
Yeah.
And you've got Webber miffed that he squandered another chance. It's just continued like the entire of the winter. It just may as well have not been.
There was an interesting Ferrari thing that I spotted in the pit lane. You know, they have Jackman. Is that what they're called? The man at the front that stops the cars and lifts it up.
Mm.
Normally, that man stands in the way of the car and then has to scrabble out the way when the lollipop goes up.
Bravest man. Or, you know, all of the front jackmen, bravest men in the pit.
Yeah, I don't fancy watching a car approaching me that fast. Mm. But anyway, so the Ferrari man, he does have to stand there in front, watch the car approach him, put the thing up. But then he moves to the side while the lollipop is still down.
Yes.
The jack sort of swivels a bit.
It's a clever design, not seemingly copied by anybody else.
Not
innovative
yet.
From Ferrari. I don't know if it's any quicker. It's certainly the guy is out of the way.
Yeah. The lollipop goes up and he sort of swings the jack out the way. So he's already out the way. He just has to get the equipment out as well. The other team at the top was McLaren. They had Hamilton in second place, despite the fact that his car was falling apart.
What a save. Somebody was smiling on McLaren this weekend.
Yeah.
Disaster. Absolute disaster during testing. Everything had gone wrong. They were trying an innovative or some multiple innovative exhaust solutions, none of which seemed to work. They threw all of the designs out the window, brought a more traditional exhaust to Australia, and it worked.
Yeah, Button had a bit of a bad day, and again, he was caught up in the Massa thing, so they both took each other out, basically.
They caused each other problems all day.
Yeah, without actually taking each other off track. Could have happened. It was lots of squabbling.
It was, fair enough, it was clean driving from the two drivers, but they didn't help each other in any way.
No. But Hamilton, yeah, the base of his car, whatever it's called.
The floor?
That'll do. It was broken and he had to nurse his car home, which he is not really known for doing.
He did
so
a good job.
That was
he
quite
did a very
impressive.
Good job. One thing to mention, actually, you just reminded me. You know when Button cut the corner to pass Massa?
Yep.
Didn't let the guy back again. Ferrari did a really clever thing. They've obviously learnt from last year. They immediately allowed Alonso to jump Massa, which straight away put Button in a bad position. And then they pitted Massa.
Yeah.
Really clever. Afterwards, I know Jensen was annoyed about that. However, completely within the regulations, really, really, really quick from the pit wall. We saw Ferrari disasters last year on the pit wall. We saw them make strategic mistakes, but they were on it. They absolutely covered themselves. As soon as Button wrong-footed himself, they put him in the worst possible position.
The only option then was a drive-through, and that's what he got.
That's what he got. And it would, I mean, Ferrari did that to him almost completely intentionally within the rules. They just stuffed his race right there and then, and they gave him no quarter. And that's to be noted from a team that was so heavily criticized for their strategy in Abu Dhabi.
Vettel and Hamilton both on the podium, joined by Petrov. Amazing.
That was a good drive. We'll talk actually in a minute about the best drives of the day. That one was up there, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And you're now suddenly a secret Petrov.
Well, actually, don't say it like I just saw him get on the podium and now I've decided that I like him. It's
okay.
Not quite that bad. It's just that he seems really cool.
Petrov.
Yeah. He's so sweet.
Is he?
He's really tall. And afterwards, when they interviewed him on the BBC forum, I think it was, they had him come in and he was clutching onto his little trophy. And he said, yeah, I'm taking this. I'm going to sleep with this. I'm never letting it go. Ah, it's cute.
I don't know where this is coming from.
Where it's coming from.
You can look at some drivers and you can say, yeah, I can see why you might think that guy's cute. I can't see it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not cute in that way. It's just that, you know, it's very sweet and he does things really nicely. And in the video for Kubica and that, it's just cute. He was going to get all of Russia on a plane to come over and help Kubica.
Okay.
So I just like
you're
him.
You're a secret Petrov fan then?
Well, not a secret, clearly.
No,
you've
not
outed
anymore.
Me.
Well, yes. Was that hard to do? You feel better for doing that now?
No. But compared to Heidfeld, I mean, he had a great weekend. Everyone thought that Heidfeld was going to come in and basically be Kubica and lead the team.
Mm.
And then today, Heidfeld was at the back.
Mm.
Petrov at the front. No one expected that.
Two things happened today in the Renault team that were surprising. One, Heidfeld did so badly.
He did have a big whack at the start.
Yes.
And there are pictures of him with quite significant bodywork missing.
It's surprising the car even finished.
Yeah.
The cooling was wrecked when he Who did he collide with?
I don't know who it was, but then he shouldn't have been back there in the first place.
Yes, he did mess up qualifying. He got caught out in the traffic, and he was at the wrong end of the grid. But the other thing that happened was Petrov excelled himself.
He qualified sixth, and he finished third.
It's a good car. We know it's a good car. They have had pace in testing. But the guy didn't put a foot wrong. I don't recall Petrov making a mistake all weekend. That's astounding.
It's very Kubica-esque.
That is astounding compared to what we saw last year, whereby Renault were carrying most of Petrov's car home in a bag of bits.
Mm.
The guy has raised his game to a completely different level, and that is impressive.
Yeah, it's impressive. It's also annoying because we liked Renault. We don't like Lotus Renault, but I do quite like Petrov, so I'm all kinds of mixed up.
The thing is, in the Lotus versus Lotus debate, what you want to see is the fight happen on track. And today, Renault Lotus won that fight.
Well, I think
absolutely, unquestionably.
I think that's always going to happen, though. They've got quite a head start.
They have, but that's where you want the fight to happen. I don't know if they do have a head start. You've got the other Lotus now have got half a Red Bull, the same engine as Renault, and they've got Mike Gascoigne. Oh, they're not that far behind. The other Lotus, the green Lotus. I'm already confused with my Lotuses. And it's the first race of the season. The green Lotus, the nice Lotus, whatever you want to call them, team Lotus, underachieved spectacularly. They from the first lap of the first practice session, it all went wrong. It never got any better.
No.
They were plagued by hydraulic problems last year. Tony Fernandez promised that wouldn't be an issue this year. They had more hydraulic problems.
I bet he's tearing his hair out.
I just don't know. I had such high hopes. I really thought they would be a midfield team. And that hasn't happened. They have pace over Virgin, but Virgin are not the competition. When you have that many decent parts in your car, Virgin are way behind you. You should be ahead of Toro Rosso. You should be ahead of Sauber. You should be up there with Renault, and they weren't.
Yeah, especially as it seems like Toro Rosso have made quite a big step forward.
Mm.
And
so have Sauber.
We had Buemi fighting in the top 10.
Yes.
And Lotus just don't seem to have made any step forward.
No.
Virgin seem to have gone backwards, and Lotus is staying where
they are. I guess Lotus has stepped forward, which is why Virgin feel like they've gone backwards. Did you notice Virgin at all this weekend?
Were Virgin there?
I almost thought
they'd fallen out of the 107 with HRT.
They were very anonymous. I'm surprised at that. We knew that they weren't going to have a major step from season to season, but they weren't visible at all.
I guess see them. Better being invisible than stuffing it up.
I did
completely.
Notice there were less, well that's true, but I did notice there were less backmarkers causing problems this year because of the number of pit stops the drivers now have to make for tyre changes. The more pit stops you make, the less likely you are to catch up with a driver going very slowly. So that's a good thing. So maybe you'll see less blue flags and you'll see less backmarkers.
That would make Virgin very happy because blue flags were their enemy last year. They wouldn't stop going on about them. Back up to the front of the field again. Perez did really well.
Now, might be my driver of the day.
Yeah, well, you see, I thought about driver of the day and I gave it to Perez in my head.
That's nice of you.
Yeah.
Now he knows.
Yeah. But I don't know if you can still do that if the cars have been disqualified. Is that still allowed?
Well, I don't. It depends. Obviously, yes, Sauber were disqualified and they have gone off to their factory to investigate what the issue was, and
they are appealing.
They've notified the FIA that they might like to appeal or whatever, and now they've gone back to the factory to measure bits and
to
then
see if
they'll
they
decide.
Will appeal.
Yeah, exactly that. Okay. So you could very well, by the time this podcast goes out, they may well have decided that they're not going to appeal anymore. There will be a performance advantage to be gained from an illegal rear wing, if that's what it was. However, most of their advantage came from an amazing strategy with Perez. Perez went out on Pirelli tyres and he one-stopped this race.
When all around him were losing their heads.
They did two stops and three stops.
Yes.
And in one case, I think they did a four stop. One-stopping on new Pirellis when you have no idea what they're going to do, and they have the ability to fall off the cliff in terms of performance very, very quickly.
And you're a rookie.
And you're a rookie in your first ever Grand Prix, and you qualified really well.
And you're in a Sauber.
It's just the odds were against Perez making it to the end of the race, and he kept it on the track, and he did a fantastic job. And I really do think, regardless of being thrown out, it's a shame he didn't get points on his debut, because that would have been a just reward. It does mean that DiResta got points on his debut because of it, you know, if the results as they currently are stand.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's 50-50. It's who deserved it the most. The rest did a great job. But I just think Perez was the man because that was almost as good a debut as Lewis Hamilton's debut. It's very hard to do. Perez has not had the backing that Hamilton had. He's not in the car as good a car as the McLaren was when Lewis Hamilton stepped in it. But that was flawless. Again, all weekend, I don't remember Perez going off track. I don't remember him making a mistake. I didn't see him lock up. The guy did nothing wrong.
And he finished ahead of Kobayashi.
He did. Who we know is aggressive and has had, a year and a bit's experience. Compare Perez to Pastor Maldonado.
Oh, dear.
He was never on track. it was a miracle if he ever hit an apex, the poor guy. I know he's rough and I know he's ready and I know he's got a lot to learn. But if you compare Perez to Maldonado, there is a clear, clear difference in talent. And that was an impressive showing from Perez.
So he is your driver of the day.
Gotta be. You can't fault it. Stuff the rear wing. I don't care. It didn't. That rear wing did not make that drive. It may have given him a tiny performance edge, possibly.
It was annoying to go to sleep, have a nap after.
Oh, I hate Formula
after
One.
After that, and then come back and find it all changed.
Every single year, the Formula One, the way the regulations are framed, you have to go racing, and then you have to check the cars after the race, and then that's when the penalty gets imposed. That car could have been checked in qualifying. When qualifying ends, the minute qualifying ends, Parc Fermé conditions kick in. We know that car cannot be touched after qualifying. We also know that there's a new curfew in Formula 1 that means nobody can get to the track before 10 a.m. or whatever. So there's these crazy regulations that says nobody can go near the cars. No one can even look at the cars between qualifying.
You've got a strict bedtime.
Got strict bedtimes and all sorts of crazy things to make sure that mechanics can't be overworked, etc., etc., etc. So why is it that a car can be in one state when it finishes qualifying, it then has to complete an entire race before anybody decides to measure it for legality?
This is
the stupidest thing in the world. It makes me so angry and it's so embarrassing. And it's the most frustrating thing about Formula One at the moment, that people go home, the fans go home, they saw a great race, and when they get home, they turn on the television and find the results have changed. And we've had this argument so often, and in this case, there is no need for it. It's stupid.
Would you let me get a word in? It is especially annoying because they did well, I think. But either way, if the car is illegal, they have to sort it out. But it does seem weird that it just takes forever to even look at the cars when the cars are there from Thursday or whenever they...
They are. And, I mean, the cars have been checked in testing and we've seen it before. It always ends up on a Sunday evening after local time, after the race is complete. That's when the FIA get out their tape measures and their rulers and they start making notes.
I guess they just think they have more time then to get it done,
It's insane that it still happens in this day and age. I do not believe... I mean, Lewis Hamilton, there was one exception to this, and that would be if Lewis Hamilton's floor fell off during the race, and then at the end of the race they said, that floor is now illegal. That's fine. We saw it fall off. We saw the sparks. We expected there might be a penalty. Mm. That's absolutely fine. But for the Sauber...
It's a design feature.
It's a design that was on the car when they completed qualifying and nobody could be bothered to check. That reeks of laziness and stupidity.
Okay, let's move on. Like you said, Perez, awesome rookie greatness. Maldonado, not so much. I don't quite understand what happened because he started the race. He was there. I saw him. He was on the grid. And then suddenly he just wasn't there. It was like he didn't even exist. They didn't show him going off. He retired from the race after a couple of corners.
Mm-hmm.
He said his car just failed him and Williams still don't know why. But it was like, we didn't even get to see it.
Well, that's a TV director issue. The bigger issue for me is that Williams, at the time of recording this podcast, which is 10 p.m. on the Sunday. Bearing in mind that the race finished at, 10 a.m. on Sunday. So they've had, we are way behind in terms of time zones. And at this point, Williams still don't know.
Or if they do know, they haven't said.
What's wrong with their car? I'm not buying it. That's the thing. If maybe they do know, maybe they're trying to think of a convenient excuse. But to not have any clue why your car stopped at this point in time, to me, seems suspicious.
Do you know what's wrong with the other car?
Rubens is in it.
Yeah. Now, we all love Rubens. Everyone knows that. But what was wrong with him today?
He was driving like a rookie.
I mean, he had that spin in qualifying, which meant that he couldn't participate in Q2, so he was starting way down the order. Mm. Somehow he found himself in the race behind, it was Rosberg, wasn't it, in the mm-hmm. Mercedes. And he just like kept driving straight on at the corner and went right into the side of him.
I think we saw the same happen to Vettel and Kubica. May have been the same corner. Same thing happened a couple of years ago.
The problem is, Rubens is every race, it's like, oh, this is his 3 millionth race. Isn't it great?
You pay for the guy for experience. That's exactly what you pay him for. Why?
It's a bit embarrassing.
He got out-qualified by his rookie teammate, who was rubbish. Mm. That's just, it's surprisingly bad. Over the winter, Rubens forgot how to drive. That's what happened.
Yeah. We do have a voicemail from Lukey, who is Rubens' biggest fan, so I hope we haven't offended him.
Hello, Lukey here. First race of the season, obviously. But I thought it was all right. It was pretty fine. It wasn't a bad race. It wasn't a great race, wasn't a classic. But it was interesting. It kept bringing up little things, you know, like Rubens smashing into people. But yeah, Rubens came through the field quite well, actually. He just had that really fail moment. It all goes back down to Petrov and Perez, doesn't it? I mean, what a drive. Both of them just amazing. I feel so bad for Sauber. I really feel bad for Sauber because I just think they've started off so much better than last year. And they deserve that, those points. So, you know, fingers crossed for the appeal. Toro Rosso as well. I thought Toro Rosso was surprisingly good at times. You know, nice to see them getting points. And, so Australia. Season's year, and I'm absolutely delighted with season's year. It was frustration, really frustrating to watch the times with Ruben Jensen. And I really miss Bruno Senna. Oh, I miss Bruno. Oh.
I forgot about Bruno Senna.
I did.
That didn't take long, did it?
No.
Bless. He's one of the five, though. He's in the five-a-side football team. He'll be all right.
From Rubens' biggest fan, now we can actually move on to another big fan of one of the drivers out there today.
And who might that be?
Who, the fan or the driver?
Don't mind.
Oh. Paul de Resta.
Yes.
Has a big fan in a certain Stephen Roy.
Now, Stephen Roy is normally Mr. Sensible when it comes to Formula One. He doesn't have favourites. He looks at everything analytically. He looks at the bigger picture. We know all this. We've had lots of voicemails from him in the past. When it comes,
he's been on many shows.
When it comes to Paul de Resta, he's a bit of a fanboy. However, he's also a bit of an expert. So we have got a new feature starting this year. For every race this season, we are going to get an expert opinion of Paul de Resta's race from the number one Paul de Resta fan.
Yeah, do you know what we're calling this feature?
I don't know.
Paul's Performance Report.
Roll VT.
It seems today in Formula One that what we say isn't much obeyed. But Stephen Roy definitely knows a thing about a young boy from West Lothian. Paul de Resta is a rookie, so should we lay a fiver with the bookie? Tell us, Stephen, nice and quick. No need for a song or for a dance. Was it a cross or was it a tick?
Perfect.
We have had a couple of other voicemails about the race. The first one comes from Gavin, and he's got some things to say about the new regulations.
Hello, Christine and Mr. C. It's Gavin here. Just wanted to call in to share my thoughts on the Australian Grand Prix. I quite enjoyed it. It was worth getting up for. It wasn't as good as last year's race, but last year's race was pretty exceptional for lots of different reasons. It was interesting to see the DRS, KERS and the new tyres in action. I think, sadly, we've been oversold on how effective these would be in making and overtaking. It seems to be a practice every year that the newfangled thingamajig that comes in is always going to save the overtaking, but then doesn't quite seem to, so I'm not sure why I thought any different this time. But the DRS does seem to work in a way that it makes overtaking possible, but it doesn't make it too easy. So it's still up to the driver to use his skill to get by, but the DRS gives him a little push. The KERS, of course, well, I'm not quite sure what's happening there. I mean, I'm surprised to hear that Red Bull didn't have KERS. Maybe it's a good thing or a bad thing. I don't know yet. We'll have to see. As with the DRS, I think Melbourne wasn't suited to it because the straights aren't long enough. I think it's really going to be in effect when we have a dry Tilke race to see if that makes a difference there on their long, typical Tilke straights coming up to the hairpin type arrangements. The tyres didn't degrade as much as I thought they would, but interesting to see that I don't think the teams fully have a handle on how the tyres work yet, so it was fun seeing different strategies. Different strategies means there's something interesting going on, which is always good. So yeah, on the whole, I quite enjoyed it, and bring on Malaysia.
Evening Side Podcast, it's AD here. I'm just giving you a quick ring to talk about the race today. Yeah, a little bit of everything really, didn't it? Vettel looked strong as ever, so that's what went in the last two races of last season and the first one of this season, so things pointed to it being a little bit ominous really with him, but it was good to see McLaren looking a lot stronger than we all thought they were going to do, so I think they've got a lot of potential in that package to really kind of turn things around later on this year. Thought Button and Hamilton both looked particularly strong. It was a shame to see JB get the drive through penalty when he did, but you know, reluctant tip of the hat to Ferrari really for playing that one really, really well and having Alonso dial straight past to kind of just mess things up for everybody really. Personal view of JB should have probably given the place back, but I think he really made Mass look a bit stupid by still managing to overtake him despite being 20 seconds down the road. What the hell was Alba doing, really? One stop in Perez mentioned to finish where he did on his debut was, you know, what a fantastic drive. It's just, you know, sad to see him to get disqualified and really lose the position. But, you know, that's racing. Looking forward to Malaysia already. All right, guys, see you later. Bye.
A great couple of voicemails there. It's good to hear other people's thoughts on the race. Do you know we have the option for more people to send in voicemails?
Would that be 01212887225? Would that be the number?
That would be it.
Am I right?
That's via Skype. You can also email me MP3s, which is actually preferable.
It's easier for us.
Skype is a bit tricky.
It can be troublesome.
Yep, but 012128TRACK, that's 01212887225, or christine@sidepodcast.com. And about all the upcoming races, we want to hear your thoughts about them. Now, we do have another voicemail, which we heard from him earlier, Stephen. He had one word to say about Paul de Resta, and we would like that to be a bit of a feature, Paul's performance report.
One word report.
Yes. But because it was de Resta's debut, Stephen does actually have a bit more to say about him.
I've been going on in Side Podcast for years about what a great driver Paul de Resta is. I think he made a really good debut both on the track and off the track. I must admit, when I saw the comments in the qualifying thread, which I slept through most of the pre-qualifying show, I couldn't believe the positive reaction he got. And when I went and watched the show, I thought his off-track debut was very similar to Karen Chantok's last year, where the guy created a brilliant impression almost immediately. Listening to him in the post-race show, where he said he let Sutil through twice, and he seemed so confident that he knew where to find a lot more time over a race distance. You know, once he's gone through his data, he seems to know exactly where to find time. I think his debut was very good. I mean, out qualifying Sutil day one, fabulous. And sticking with Sutil and leading him for, you know, large chunks of the race, I think the guy's got a great future, which I always suspected. It's up to him to deliver on that now. But I think over the next few races, once he gets used to... I mean, these guys are not even used to driving this kind of race distance yet. So, for me, he was the rookie of the day. I mean, I don't want to take away from what Perez did. I thought he had a brilliant race as well. But Kobayashi is not Sutil for me. So, I think the rest of his race debut, every bit as good as I expected it to be.
I think that about wraps up what happened in the race.
Nailed it. I think I can't believe we missed anything apart from all the other things.
We're bound to have missed a lot.
I do want to say that I definitely enjoyed it. Television, an actual television, contributed to my enjoyment. Not knowing everything about everything going into the race. A lot of unknowns due to not really paying much attention when I should have been.
You said you didn't like testing very much.
Well, it just made a difference going in thinking, well, I don't know how they're going to do. And, you know, I saw all five sessions during the weekend. Couldn't say I was bored at any point at all. It was hectic, it was non-stop, it was good fun. It's a good start to the season. I feel much more optimistic this year than I did this time last year.
Well, that's good. How would you rate this race out of 10?
You want to put a number on it?
Yep, out of 10.
Yeah. I'm gonna go for a perfect 7. It didn't really reach to a climax, but I never thought, oh, I've never looked at the lap count and thought there's quite a few laps to go.
It did
still.
Go quite quickly, I felt.
Yeah, I did. Even the last laps were, it was Alonso versus Petrov.
Mm.
That was good. Held my attention. Really happy. No complaints. Yourself?
I'm going to say 6.
Okay. We should keep a record of this.
We will.
Definitely. We need a table and we need other people's contributions as well. We need to know what you think. Because to me, it's a good start to the season. Thank goodness for Melbourne.
Feedback. We should begin with a voicemail that we've actually had for a while, but we just haven't done a show to put it in.
Yes, that's all our fault.
Yes.
Time is getting tight now. This is going to happen very soon.
It's all about an international SidePod meetup.
Very exciting.
Which I think has been called SidePod Boston, which actually gives away where it is. Bassano and I think Jana are flying over to Boston, and there are a couple of people there, Kai and Scott, and they're all going to meet up and have beers or whatever
it is. This is the most international SidePod meetup ever.
Well,
it also features people traveling the most miles.
Yeah, I mean, I think aside from the spa thing, which doesn't necessarily count because it was for a race, This is just going across the sea for a meetup.
To drink.
Amazing.
Hey, Bassano, how you doing?
Hey, Kai, how's things?
Very good, very good. I was thinking about Boston. I'm glad you came by.
Well, that's exactly what I wanted to talk about. So we were having that chat in the comments over at Side Podcast, and we need to really get sort of the message out that we're going to do this Side Pod Boston, but I haven't really come up with any good ideas of how we're going to do that.
Yeah, I'm not sure how do we let people know that this is happening and when, or like potentially when and where.
See, what we could probably have is some form of web page where people could put ideas up and then other people could look at it, and we need in a medium where we could broadcast that out. What do you reckon?
Sort of like a wiki or something like that.
A wiki, I've heard of those. They could be really handy. And then after we've done that, we need a way of telling people who are over in the East Coast, because they're probably tired of hearing about all these London meetups. Let's go and have one over there. But we've got to tell people about it. So if only there was a way of maybe like a podcast for people who might be interested in Formula One and maybe Side Podcast, if there was a way that they'd know about it. If we think about how we're going to broadcast that out and then get that person to put the notes, as well as talking about it, put them in the show notes, we'd probably have everything covered. What do you reckon?
I think so. And I think if one person has the show notes, and if someone doesn't really go by the show notes at all...
Oh, because that can happen.
That first person could remind the second person that the show notes exist, maybe, something like that.
Definitely, definitely. Well, this can't fail. This is...
It's foolproof.
It's going to be great.
I do love that. Classic. If you're in the Boston area this coming weekend, so we're recording this on the 27th, the podcast will probably go out on the 27th, 28th. This coming weekend is the 2nd and 3rd of April. That's when people are meeting in Boston.
So
SciPodcast listeners and commenters, people you know, voices you know, people you love, will be converging on Boston in America. International SciPodcast. It's like International Rescue, except there's more drinking.
Next up, I had a message from Jason who says, "Hi guys, great coverage this weekend. Just wanted to try and bring everyone's feet back to earth a bit by pointing a couple of things out. Every year there are rule changes or supplier changes, and something is always a little bit different. There is some anxiousness to be expected about this, but the level of grousing at the first race has been pretty high lately. I was disappointed to hear people complaining about the DRS and its fake overtaking. Same as with the supposedly terrible Pirellis. Every driver has the same circumstances when it comes to dealing with these new pieces of kit. I don't believe a driver would be able to overtake using DRS and successfully hold his position unless he was faster than his opponent on raw pace in the first place. I don't believe there should be such negativity about the new technology. Despite complaints surrounding Bahrain 2010, we all got over ourselves and had a fantastic, closely contested season. We're due for another one this year, and we should all be doing our best to enjoy it instead of looking ahead with pessimism and looking back with rose-tinted glasses." Now, that is an interesting thought, but Jason says, despite complaints surrounding Bahrain 2010, we all got over ourselves.
I didn't.
We didn't.
Never got over it. Don't even talk. Why even bring Bahrain 2010 into it? Why even start that? That's depressing.
Yeah.
No, I didn't get over last year. I had a terrible 2010 and it didn't get any better. But never mind. That's for another day.
We're going to play another voicemail next. But before that, I wanted to give a quick shout out to Philip, who emailed me a photograph of a car. Now, obviously, that doesn't work on an audio show, so I'm just going to say thanks to Philip. He spotted this car with a fab number plate. It was FI4ALL. Can you figure that out?
Is it F1 for all?
Yes, it is.
Interesting. Yes. Ah, we need that number plate. Is that a UK reg plate?
I don't know, but I like it.
We need to buy that. Yeah. I wonder if someone will take an offer.
The voicemail comes from Dieter, and he's referencing something we talked about possibly in the last show or a couple of shows ago.
Hi there, Side Podcast. This is Dieter from South Africa. I was listening to your review this week, and I was also wondering about the Club One that Sauber has. You mentioned that there was a lot of benefit maybe just for them to, you know, sit in the paddocks or rather the business centres and so forth. But now I think there is still room for this type of partnership where one pays some sort of money but and not necessarily want the advertising exposure rather than actually getting the technical exposure. Where there's some strategic partnership happening there, where both parties benefit from technical knowledge being swapped out. A phone company, you know, that's sponsoring the Club One. I'm not very sure how a Litany or a tobacco company could possibly gain anything from that. But anyway, it was just something interesting that I thought.
I must say, I'm not sure I noticed the Sauber One Club logo on the car.
Did they replace it with a sponsor?
I don't know.
That's it. We ought to check that out.
I need to go and watch the highlights again.
Fancy turning up to Side Podcast and not having the facts to hand. I think they replaced it with another sponsor. I didn't notice it at all.
No. Williams, they were also doing some weird things, weren't they?
Williams, oh, AT&T. I did laugh at that. AT&T, for some reason, decided they didn't want their logo on the Williams and replaced it with a charity, which is very nice and very noble of them.
It was only some of the logos, but it did seem like coming on the back of this Sauber One thing.
Yeah, we don't want anything to do with... No, don't tell anyone we're in Formula One. Shh. Yeah, it's very odd. But, you know, good for them. Good chance to give a bit of exposure to a charity, I guess.
Andy got in contact with me via the contact form, which is at sidepodcast.com/about. Should be at contact, but you haven't done it yet.
Still going on about it.
Every time. He said, well, I'm going with Lotus for Team Lotus and Renault for the one Proton sponsors. Or maybe we should call them Proton. As far as I'm concerned, Team Lotus is a team and the other Lotus is a sponsor. You never say, look at that Vodafone going into turn one, or that RBS is fast today. Well, you wouldn't say that this year anyway, would you?
No. You wouldn't even say that AT&T Williams is. You would say that charity hospice is fast today.
The whole thing is stupid and I hope Team Lotus kick their butt. So that's from Andy. Yeah, they have gone to court now, haven't they?
They have gone to court. Don't know what's going to happen.
Not really following
it. There's a whole on-off, hot and cold relationship with David Hunt.
He's changed his mind again, hasn't he?
He's changed his mind every single day.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, in the time that we started recording this podcast and now, he's already changed his mind twice in that period. Impossible to know what David Hunt is thinking at any one time.
Last time I checked, Tony Fernandez was his BFF again.
Right.
After hating them.
Good luck with that, Tony.
Finally, I had another message via the contact form, but this one was anonymous. I'm not sure we've had an anonymous message before. It's quite exciting.
Okay.
It says, can you please blow Silverstone's trumpet? I've just got back from a school trip, which I organised with Silverstone. For no charge, they laid on a question and answer session for the children with two very knowledgeable people who did an excellent job at answering various car questions in child-friendly language. They also laid on a session at the Skid Pan where all the children got the opportunity to both watch and sit in cars sliding around, skidding with and without ABS, doing donuts, etc., etc. The children and staff were given a memorable day and could now well be involved in motorsport in the future. Well done, Silverstone. So who else is watching the GP there this year?
Fantastic. I don't recall that ever happening to me at school.
No.
Why couldn't I go to that school?
That is a great day out.
Yay for Silverstone, but yay for that school too.
I'm sad it's anonymous because I want to go to the school.
The anonymous school. That sounds perfect for me.
Hmm. Housekeeping. Most of my weekend was spent manning the Fact Bite Fact Box during all the sessions, except for one. I had to hand over to you.
Do sleep.
Yeah, but all the sessions.
I rock.
Yeah, of the Grand Prix weekend, plus a boat race, but that's just beside the point.
Previous to this week, you did was it an 8-hour charity event coverage?
Yeah.
And then a 12-hour
12
race,
hours endurance of Sebring.
Race.
I'm not quite sure how I did that.
20 hours of Fat by Fat Boxing, followed by about 12 this weekend.
Quite a lot of Sebring is a blur, I must say.
Mm. You are slightly addicted, but I love the Fact by Fact Box. And I love that this year it's just working so well. We spent all of the off season working really hard to make to get rid of all of the bugs and the issues we had with it and made it really stable.
Yeah.
Not too much in the way of new features.
There's nothing
come to Side Podcast
fancy and new. But it all just works.
Everything this weekend just worked. Honestly, all the technology, nothing fell over. We're nowhere near hitting limits on scalability. We don't need to buy any new equipment. Nothing is, you know,
except for the TV.
Well, we got that. That works. You know, it just sits in the corner. Even the TV just works. You know, we plugged it in and it just like worked. It's yeah. amazing. Everything we've done over the off season is finally sort of come together for the race. And Friday, Saturday, Sunday, not a problem anywhere.
So I guess the idea is now that things work, we can build on them without breaking things
oh,
even further.
Yes, definitely.
So
I mean,
exciting things to come.
The Fact by Fact Box is fantastic. I love the coverage. It's amazingly hard work, and you put in so much effort to it.
But it is addictive, like you said, so I love it.
I did the one session, and I was exhausted. I mean, it took me 12 hours to recover from it, so I don't know how you do it. But if you're listening to this show and you haven't tried watching or following the Fact by Fact Box during any F1 session, I think it's a really, really, really good thing, and I just love how well it works.
Yeah. That's enough patting ourselves on the back, I think.
High fives to us.
Yeah. You mentioned that we haven't hit any limits of scalability, but there are some limits we've hit in terms of podcasting and the like.
Oh, yeah.
Now,
I blogged about this.
Yeah, we had a great video from Five Live.
Mm.
Quite a lot of people downloaded it that we weren't expecting, and we couldn't do any more podcasting for a month.
It was quite popular, and it maxed out one server within, I think, 4 days. So we have a limit on how many things we can be downloaded from our server. It maxed that out very quickly. We moved to another server, and I think it's already maxed that out. However, on top of that, we were actually, at the end of last season, hitting every limit everywhere. We've not been able to video podcast for the last 9 months, really, realistically. It's very expensive to do well. That's the thing. I mean, if you want fast downloads and reliable downloads, it costs more money. And we've been pushing the limits. And so this year, we genuinely cannot afford to do a video podcast. Audio is less of an issue because the file sizes are smaller. So we've got that under control at the moment. Although, you know, maybe this time next year, we may not have that under control either. The more people who download these shows, the more popular it gets, the more it costs us. And that's why we desperately need your donations.
Yeah, you wrote a post about it asking for a couple of donations, and we did have a great response to that.
An amazing response. I
want to thank everyone that donated some money. It's amazing. One thing I would say is it's the same old story as quite a lot of content out there, that if everyone that downloaded it signed up for the £1 a month, which doesn't seem like a lot if you're getting a lot mm-hmm. back from the site, we could all do this forever, buy a mansion probably.
If I'll tell you what, I wouldn't go that
no
far. I don't know if you could, but I will say that if everybody who listens to this show that we're recording right now donated $1 to Side Podcast, we wouldn't have to ask for donations again this year. We do rely on lovely, lovely, lovely donations. If you listen to Side Podcast, if you like what you hear, if you want us to continue doing this, please, please donate.
And it doesn't have to be a lot, just a little bit.
So the smallest amounts make the biggest difference.
You know what we need is a totalizer, like they do on Blue Peter and things like that, when they raise money for charity and things. And so you start at the bottom, and then it's like, if you give us this much money, then we can host our podcast for a month. And if you give us this much money, then we can host
it. We could do that. The problem you have is that it's a moving total, because the more people who listen, the more people who subscribe to Side Podcast, the more that figure moves away from
yeah.
you. It's like you're chasing an impossible target.
Yeah.
And the thing is, we've done everything we can to be unpopular. Last year, we gave up. We said, we hate Formula One. We don't want to talk about Formula One anymore. Don't listen to us. And more people listened. We don't want to flood the site with adverts if we can help it. And therefore, donations are essential.
On that happy note, I think we're done.
Really?
Yep.
We've nailed it.
Yep.
We survived weekend one.
Weekend one, yes.
And it all
have you crossed it off the calendar on your wall? One down.
Big old tick. It was hard work.
It was hard. I think it's just the time difference, really. Every year, I think, yeah, Formula One, I can do this. It's brilliant. And then at the end of the year, I'm like, oh, I'm too old. At the end of the weekend, I mean, Australia, too old for this. It's just crazy o'clock. Can't cope.
It is. And the UK times, clocks going forward, the time difference.
Someone stole an hour from me.
Yeah. Bad week to do that. Mm. And that's all Bernie Eccleston's fault.
Yeah, well, he thinks it's a good thing.
It's a terrible thing. Bernie, it's a terrible thing.
He thinks he's doing us a favour.
Yeah.
I'm not so
again,
sure about that.
He thinks turbo engines are bad. He's like, he lives in the opposite world to us.
Opposite world, yeah.
That's what it is. It's all Bernie's fault.